with NITV Radio on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yama, and welcome to NITV Radio. Bertrand Tungandami Ngaya. I am Bertrand Tungandami. Coming up in your program this Wednesday, the 17th of April, the program will look at a new anti-smoking campaign trying to tackle the prevalence of smoking in remote First Nations communities. We also have a conversation with singer-songwriter Paul Achie, director, cultural engagement at Pajima 2024, will be giving us some insights into the 10-day stunning festival of lights currently underway in Bantwe, Alice Springs. Also, Carla Grant, Living Black executive producer and host, will join us as this NITV's flagship current affairs program returns for the 31st season. All these stories and more coming to you on NITV Radio after the latest news.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
Bulletin, Alice Springs youth curfew ends as advocates of First Nations residents question the effectiveness of the measure that's been lauded by authorities. The High Court hears a legal challenge against indefinite detention. And Gaza Health Ministry reports an Israeli airstrike claims 11 people at a Gaza refugee camp. The end of a three-week youth curfew this week in Alice Springs has raised questions about the outback town's long-term future. Chief Minister Eva Lola and Alice Springs Mayor Matt Patterson have called the policy a success, with police reporting a positive impact in the reduction of youth crime as well as domestic violence. But advocates and some First Nations residents have criticized the measure, under which children aged 18 were prohibited from entering central aged under 18 were prohibited from entering central Alice Springs between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. 18-year-old Alice Springs woman Shania McAdam-Bray says she'd like to see a focus on more long-term solutions.
It's not really addressing the problem in Alice Springs, because obviously when the curfew's done, everything's going to go back to normal. So it's just a band-aid at the moment. They need to come up with a real solution, or at least some other ideas, to help actually get to the core of the issue with the youth and the crime and everything like that.
Extra police patrols will be on the streets to allay fears of a return to the violence which saw the emergency curfew imposed on March 27. Mayor Patterson has said creating a safe space for young people sleeping rough is essential and has urged the establishment of permanent youth accommodation. An inquiry in Victoria has heard royalties agreements were intentionally set up to exclude Aboriginal people from their share of more than $1 billion in land use revenue. State Environment Minister Steve Dimopoulos has told the Europe Justice Commission he believed none of the $1.89 billion in forestry and grazing license revenue since 2010 has gone to traditional owners. Mr. Dimopoulos says as minister he is unable to redirect revenue flowing to the Department of Energy, Environment and Climate Action. Inquiry Commissioner Maggie Walter said the failure to distribute any funds that have come from Crown lands to First Peoples showed there's not been a significant shift in attitude by the state government. Homes Affairs Minister Claire O'Neill says the government is prepared for whatever decision the High Court makes as it considers another immigration case that could have ramification for others. Lawyers for an Iranian man who is refusing to cooperate with efforts to deport him will go before the court today and call for his release into the community. The man arrived by boat more than a decade ago, and he says if he's deported to Iran, he'll be persecuted because he identifies as bisexual. Claire O'Neill has told Channel 7 the government is prepared.
We have very strongly argued that we should be allowed to continue to detain this person. I can tell your viewers, of course, that we are prepared for every eventuality in terms of what decision is made about this, but please understand, at the moment, we are empowered to keep that person in detention, and he is in detention.
And lawyers for the man have told the court his removal from Australia is not practical for the foreseeable future. The government will put its arguments to the court this afternoon. The federal opposition says immediate changes need to be made to increase national security. Coalition Defence spokesperson Andrew Hastie has told the ABC Anthony Albanese should restore the Director General of ASIO and ASIS to his National Security Committee of Cabinet.
We are under immense pressure. People are scared. Anthony Albanese needs to send a few signals that he's serious about national security. He can start by restoring the Directors General of ASIS and ASIO to his National Security Committee of Cabinet. I think that's a huge oversight.
The operators of Westfield Bondi Junction say the complex will reopen tomorrow for a reflection day where there will be no trading. Elliot Rassenor from the Centre Group says councillors will be available to support people.
The centre will open as a community reflection day. There will be no retail trade tomorrow. Instead, the centre will be open for members of the community to visit the centre, to walk through the centre and to pay their respects. There will be counselling services available on site in order to provide resources to all who need.
Green Senator Nick McKim says he's not satisfied with what he's called the reasons and excuses offered by the heads of Coles and Woolworths to a Senate inquiry he's chairing. The inquiry saw testy exchanges between both the chief executives and the senators, and Nick McKim even warned the Woolworths CEO Brad Banducci that he could be fined or jailed for contempt of the Senate for refusing to answer questions. Senator McKim says he's sceptical about some of what he heard.
I'm not buying some of the reasons or the excuses that we heard from both Coles and Woolworths yesterday. Look, we have a supermarket sector that's far more concentrated than similar countries, and that market dominance allows them to get away with some of the practices that we've heard evidence about.
Gaza's health ministry says an Israeli airstrike on a refugee camp in Gaza has killed at least 11 people. It says the Maghazi urban refugee camp was struck and the dead were taken to a nearby hospital. This man lost family members in the strike.
Oh, people of the world, what is happening is wrong. Have mercy on us. Stop the war. Stop the war. Children are dying in the streets.
The health ministry says Israel's operation since October 7 has killed more than 33,000 Palestinians and wounded more than 76,000 people. Israel says it has killed over 12,000 militants during the war. Meantime, the Israeli army has released footage showing what it says is a strike on a car in southern Lebanon that's killed a Hezbollah commander. It comes as the Lebanese state-run national news agency reported an Israeli drone strike on a car in southern Lebanon killed a Hezbollah commander and wounded two others, while another strike later in a nearby area inflicted casualties. Hezbollah identified the commander near the coastal city of Tai as Ismail Baz. The Israeli military said Baz served as a senior and veteran official in several positions of Hezbollah's military wing. It added that as part of his position, Ismail was involved in the promotion and planning of rocket and anti-tank missile launches towards Israel from the coastal area of Lebanon. Hezbollah militants and Israeli forces have been exchanging fire since a day after the Israeli-Hamas war began on October 7. nearly 260 Hezbollah members and about 50 civilians have been killed on the Lebanese side of the border since then. The fighting has killed 9 civilians and 11 soldiers in Israel. Back home, a cattle property in outback Queensland will be turned into a national park after one of the largest philanthropic donations for protected land in Australia. The purchase of Vegamont Station near Longreach will conserve nearly 350,000 hectares after a $21 million donation from an anonymous philanthropist. The acquisition by the Queensland government was completed with the support of the Nature Conservancy, to which the donation was made. The working cattle farm is a habitat for the elusive and endangered night parrot, the vulnerable yellow-footed rock wallaby, and threatened Appleton grass wren. It also sits at the headwaters of the Lake Eyre Basin, one of Queensland's most important inland river catchments. And to sport in AFL, Port Adelaide forward Jeremy Finlayson has expressed his frustration with the 3-match suspension handed to him by the AFL for making a homophobic slur. While he has apologised multiple times, he has since vented about the penalty during an episode of his wife Kelly Finlayson's podcast. In a segment where the hosts and guests highlight their goods, bad and offensive talking points for the week, Finlayson said his offensive is that he is pissed off that he got a 3-week suspension. And having a look at the weather around the country, Broome sunny 36, Perth also sunny 32, Adelaide partly cloudy 21, Melbourne showers 17, Hobart partly cloudy 19, Albury Wodonga similar forecast 21, Canberra partly cloudy 21, Wollongong shower 2 21, Sydney showers 24, Newcastle a shower 2 25, Brisbane similar conditions 28, Townsville mostly cloudy 30, Cairns possible shower 31, Alice Springs sunny 27, Darwin a shower or two developing 34, and the Torres Strait Islands mostly cloudy day ahead and a top of 30 degrees. And that is NITV Radio News.
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
I'm Bertrand Tungandame and you're listening to NITV Radio, broadcasting from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Wednesday afternoon. Coming up next, conversation with Paul Ache, singer, songwriter and also the director of community engagement for Prajima 2024. Paul Ache will give us insights into this year's event, already dubbed the best ever. Also in the program is as NITV's flagship current affairs program, Living Black, returns for a new groundbreaking season. We caught up with the program's executive producer and host, Carla Grant, to learn more about what's in store for us in the new season. But first, the tobacco prevalence and measures taken to address the issue.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Tobacco smoking in Indigenous communities is an issue that health authorities around the country have long been trying to address. The problem has been found to be more acute as communities become more remote. Now, an anti-smoking campaign is trying to reach those communities with the aim of providing resources for addicted smokers to help them quit. One of those is the far north Queensland town of Yarraba, an hour outside of Cairns, as Tace Okusi explains.
A world away from the tourism hub of Cairns, the town of Yarraba is waking to another sun-filled morning. The steep hills covered in thick rainforest give way to a small clearing where this Indigenous community has developed along a stretch of beach. A newly constructed jetty extends into the water, which some early risers are using for fishing and crabbing. But in this slice of paradise, the local health service, Gurini Yelamaka, has raised concerns that the lack of housing and employment opportunities have exacerbated the issue of smoking. Its chief executive is Suzanne Andrews.
So one of the main things that we are challenged with is overcrowding in the homes. So when we look at the social challenges, overcrowding is one of those. So if you've got somebody in a house of, say, 12 people and that person wants to give up smoking, it's really hard when you've got four or five other people in the house that's smoking as well. So that's a challenge in itself.
Census data shows there are just over 2,500 people in this community, but health authorities say that figure is closer to 4,500. Regardless, the vast majority identifies as Indigenous, and the rate of tobacco smokers among them far outnumbers the national rate. The Australian Institute for Health and Welfare says 8.3% of the population above 14 years old smokes daily. In Yarrabah, though, the local health service puts that number as high as 55%, which they say is due to a range of social factors. Lynette Anderson is the Queensland manager for the federal government's Tackling Indigenous Smoking Initiative.
And we know from the stats here in Yarrabah that the smoking rates are high because they're dealing with a lot of disadvantage in terms of employment opportunities and housing opportunities. So yes, very important that we look at smoking in a holistic way and not just worry about the fact that you're smoking. We need to help you in some way.
In town, a new campaign has been launched in partnership with Deadly Choices and Tackling Indigenous Smoking. Its aim is to reduce the issue in remote communities, particularly among young people and pregnant women. Lynette Anderson again.
Our women know that it's bad for them to smoke, but and what we're seeing is more of a trend to try and reduce their smoking as opposed to quitting altogether, because the stresses that are at home. You know, they have other children at home, sometimes we have overcrowding in homes that women are dealing with. They could also be victims of domestic violence. So whilst they're trying to reduce, it's a whole other angle that we need to address in terms of them quitting altogether, because you can't take that away without knowing all of the other stresses that are impacting on their day-to-day lives.
Yarrabah local Ian Patterson started at the age of 13 and says he ended up addicted for more than 20 years. He says he still remembers his first cigarette.
Actually, it was a Rollie. So that was 1974 when I was 13 years of age. So, you know, I don't know, it was just experimenting, I suppose, at that age. Not so much rebelling, but just, running with the boys.
The launch featured gazebos on the local football oval, which had educational resources for the community. There were also surveys to take a sample of the number of smokers and direct smokers who wanted to quit to support services.
Play on, play on, play on!
And because this is far north Queensland, which is mad for rugby league, there was some NRL star power from former players and now Deadly Choices ambassadors, Petro Sivanasiva and Willy Tonga, who spoke with SBS at the launch.
Smoking is one of those issues that our people do, find themselves in. And, we want to break that cycle, close the gap. And, there's so many benefits, if they do quit smoking. We want them to live healthier lifestyles and, also get that education out there.
For up-and-coming fullback Hezron Murga, who has a promising future in the game, staying away from tobacco is important.
Like, if you're playing football, then you could just faint and, be in the hospital.
A message this campaign hopes will be heard by the rest of the community. Tysock Husey, SBS News.
NITV Radio, share our stories on Facebook.
We must now step aside for another break, but stay with us, because when we come back, Paula Che, a singer-songwriter from Alice Springs, he's also the cultural engagement director for the Pragma 2024 festival, and he'll join us to give us insights into the 10-day-long festival that's currently underway in the Red Centre.
Hi, you're listening to the radio of NITV.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Parjama Festival in Light is back for 2024, illuminating the Red Center in Alice Springs in more ways than one, with some of Australia's most prominent First Nations identities participating in the always popular Talks program. To explore the event, I'm happy to say I'm joined by Paul Ache, singer, songwriter and Parjama Director of Cultural Engagement. Paul Ache, first of all, thanks for joining us and welcome to NITV Radio.
Yeah, good. Good to be with you.
Now, can you share your insights into the significance of Parjama 2024, a festival in light as a platform for celebrating and sharing Aboriginal culture?
Parjama, you know, as an event, is a unique event in that it provides opportunity to see Aboriginal art projected in light. But it's also a showcase of Aboriginal stories, history, performance, and just general discussion. And we also have the opportunity to show the artworks on the ground as well as projected onto the ranges, the Yiparinya, which is the Western McDonald Ranges.
And can you tell us how does Parjama, the talks at the Parjama Festival, contribute to the festival's overarching theme of interconnectedness in First Nations culture?
The theme of interconnectedness is based around that connection we have to land, to country, to our songs, to our dance, to our culture, to peoples, and basically to the natural environment. So it's basically a discussion and also a showcase of what that interconnectedness means to people and to First Nations people, and especially to people that are located here in Central Australia.
And can you elaborate on the cultural significance and inspiration behind the new light installation? Because, just correct me if I say it wrong, Georgia Cockatoos, and its representation of Western Arrernte country.
The red-tailed cockatoo is synonymous and very important to Arrernte peoples, and the significance of showing those particular birds is that connection that people have with that red-tailed cockatoo. But also, the cockatoos themselves often, you know, have significance, especially around water sites. Their plumage and their feathers are used in ceremony, but, you know, a very part of the landscape and really signify that strength and resilience of the stories that are related to those particular birds.
As an accomplished musician yourself, how do you see the integration of live music and performance enhancing the overall Parjama experience?
You know, music is just another art form which allows the artists to tell their stories and do it in a way that, you know, they can sort of interact with all different types of generations. Also have music to support the lyrical content or the story or the message that they want to, you know, get across in their particular songs and their performance. So having a platform for that, I think, just value adds the whole experience of Parjama, in that it sort of allows people to dance or to sit down and listen, or, you know, to take interesting, or you know, just watch it as a performance and then relate that to what they might see in terms of other installations that are being in display at Parjama. So I think it's quite a good fit.
Parjama is not just a local event. Can you tell us in what ways the festival seeks to engage both local and international audiences in understanding and appreciating Aboriginal culture?
Yeah, and I think that's the words that you said. It's providing that opportunity for people to understand and to connect with Aboriginal culture in a different forms of medium so that, you know, if they want to engage a lot more, you know, for example, we have an installation at this year's festival around the honouring, and it's the honouring of a well-respected lady who passed last year, but her legacy and what she did in the community and her stories and her poetry and her writings and her songs and her artwork, you know, is being displayed. So it's about showing that connection, that interconnectedness that a person has with culture and with the land. I think a lot of international tourists and tourists in general or people that are visiting really want to understand or get an understanding of that. So that's really at the core of what Pajma is about.
Could you discuss with us the role of Pajma in supporting the local economy and businesses, particularly in the context of the Red Centre region?
Pajma attracts a lot of people to the Central Australian region. And when they do come here, you know, Pajma is a 10-day festival. So you've got family groups, you've got other interested tourists that want to come in and have a look at the region. So by having Pajma here, people may choose to stay, you know, an extra day or an extra night. But once they see the actual event, then they do go out and visit other cafes and restaurants and wine bars, or they go and visit, you know, Aboriginal communities, or visit some, you know, tourism operators that are within the region. So it adds to the economy in that respect. And it's I don't really quite have the numbers in front of me, but it's quite substantial the amount of dollars that are spent in the region.
And how do you envision Pajma evolving in the future, particularly as it's approaching its milestone 10th anniversary next year?
Yeah, and that's a big question that we are currently grappling with at the moment, is how do we grow the event? Because as you know, it's difficult to put an event on anywhere, and lots of events are, you know, struggling for all different reasons. So to have the event to remain relevant, current, I think that, you know, there's some thought and processes going into how we take Pajma forward. There's lots of learnings over the last, you know, 8-9 years. So what we do now is got to sort of sit back, reflect, look forward, look at what we've got, look at where we are, and then look at how we go forward. So that's a work in progress at the moment. We just got a new provider that's come on board, a company called Grumpy Sailor, combined with We Are Gather. So a company that's based out of the eastern coast of Australia. So it's working with them and working with other stakeholders, working with government and working with potential sponsors. And, of course, the traditional custodians of this land that the event's on, but also other Aboriginal groups, and just seeing how Pajma can go forward and become, you know, a sustainable, you know, vibrant event going forward.
And before I let you go, anything you'd like to add, something maybe we have missed in this conversation that's really crucial for our listeners to know about?
I just think that if people are listening, certainly put in their calendar for 2025. The event this year has been very successful. I think the opening night was the biggest, second biggest night ever in the history of Pajma in its very short lifetime. But and numbers coming to Pajma have been very, very good and in par with previous years, if not better. So the event is very, very strong. It's attracting a lot of people. So and people are saying that it's fantastic. So if those people that are listening haven't been to Alice Springs and looking at coming up, come and have a look in 2025. If you can't this year, certainly come up next year.
Paul Achie, Pajma Director of Cultural Engagement, thank you very much for joining us on ITV Radio to talk to us about Pajma 2024, currently underway in Alice Springs.
Thank you very much.
Now, if you missed part of this conversation or you want to listen to it again, you can find it on our website sbs.com.au/NITV Radio. Later this afternoon, we also update the website with more stories from Pajima, including the story of the Mulgabor hard rock band, a teenage rock band that seems to be unstoppable. We must now step aside for another break, but stay with us, because when we come back, we explore the 31st season of Living Black, Australia's longest running First Nations current affairs program.
Hey guys, Jackie White here, proud Wiradjuri man. You're listening to NITV Radio. Let's go.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Living Black, Australia's longest-running Indigenous current affairs TV program, is returning for its 21st year, also its 31st season, premiering on Monday, the 22nd of April at 8:30 p.m. and also encored on SBS on Tuesday, the 23rd of April at 10:30 p.m. And I'm pleased to say I'm joined by Carla Grant, Living Black executive producer and journalist, to give us some insights into everything you need to know about the new season. Carla, thanks for joining us and welcome to NITV Radio again.
Thank you so much, Bertrand. It's good to be with you again.
Now, what can viewers expect from the upcoming season of Living Black now in its 31st season?
Yeah, well, we've got a really fantastic new series for you coming up this year, Series 31. Of course, we celebrated our 20th anniversary last year, which is a huge milestone for us. Very proud of the program and how far it's come. And, yeah, 21 this year, turning 21, and our 31st season. So we've got a really, really strong, diverse lineup of conversations for you. For the first 10 weeks, and we've got some, amazing people that we're speaking to this series, including for the first episode, we're speaking with the longest serving Matilda, Lydia Williams, on the road to the Olympic Games. Of course, the Matildas will be in Paris for the Olympic Games in July this year, and so she's she's part of the squad, and she's busy training and getting prepared for that. So it was really wonderful to sit down with her for our very first episode. And we have comedian Andy Saunders, who people might know from The Block. He was a former contestant, he and his wife, on The Block, the renovation program. And he's also a proud Biripi man and a comedian who's been working in the industry for, over 15 years. And was wonderful sitting down with him, such a funny guy, and a really interesting story to tell as well. We also speak with ARIA-nominated and Andiliyakwa singer Emily Waramara. She's a beautiful singer-songwriter, and she's got a new album coming out, and also looking to tour the country later this year. So we had a beautiful sit-down interview with Emily. Auntie Barbara McGrady, I'm sure many of your audiences will know of Auntie Barb. She's a famous face that we see around the traps taking photos of mainly our sporting heroes. And she's she's our first Indigenous Australian photojournalist. So we look at her, illustrious career and talk about, what motivated her to get into photography and what she likes to do best, which is to photograph sports people. And she really loves photographing our NRL players and AFL players, as well as our boxers as well. That was a really great interview with Auntie Barb. And also Black Douglas, who I'm sure your audiences will be familiar with as well. He was the 2022 Archibald Prize winner. He's a Dungari artist, and we speak to him about his new film that's just come out called Black Douglas versus the Commonwealth. So it's a fascinating documentary about his journey in tracing the life of his grandmother, who was a member of the Stolen Generation. She was taken away from her parents at a very young age and sent to the Cootamundra Girls Home. He actually, traces her life and finds out more about the family, and it's a really moving and emotional journey for him. So a lot coming up, but as well as our investigations, of course, you know, we're known for our award-winning investigations, and we've got another strong lineup of investigations coming up for this series as well.
Yeah, without giving too much away, can you share with us some details about these powerful investigations? Just looking at the press release, I saw some really very, very interesting stories coming up about black cladding and the redevelopment of the block in Redfern. Can you give us just some insights into what we can expect?
Don't want to give too much away, Bertrand, but because I would, you know, we want viewers to, well, the audience to tune in to these investigations. But yeah, we are looking at black cladding and Aboriginal businesses and you know, what's happening in that sort of sector where Aboriginal people are used to front a business. The business is actually a non-Indigenous business, and they're just using First Nations people to front that business. So there's a lot of that happening, as we find out in our investigation. It just shows that there needs to be, you know, a lot more governance around it and a lot stricter controls around that, so that the money that is available for Indigenous businesses actually goes to the Indigenous businesses. And also, yeah, as you mentioned, we are looking into the redevelopment at the block in Redfern and just examining that and the impact that it's had on the community there. So another fascinating story.
Yeah, and it's also said that the series will feature international First Nations talents. Can you share some teasers about some of the guests that you spoke to and the issues on a global scale that we'll be exploring?
We actually got to meet a First Nations Cherokee chef from Oklahoma in the US. Her name is Nico Albert Williams. She's a Cherokee chef, a caterer, and a student of traditional Indigenous cuisines. So Nico was out here to attend the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, amongst several other sort of events. We were lucky enough to meet her, and she came into the studio actually, and we did our very first cooking segment on Living Black, so that was a lot of fun. Nico cooked for us a very special Cherokee dish, blue corn dumpling soup. It was delicious, and we cooked that up on the set and tasted that, and you know, she talked to us about how she got into cooking and finding her heritage as well, and the importance of food and, you know, sort of sitting around very much like our mob, sitting around having a feed and talk, you know, sharing stories as well. So, so that's going to be, you know, something different for Living Black this series.
Yeah, and from featuring international guests, the show will also reach the wider multicultural community in Australia. Can you elaborate on the decision to include subtitles in Arabic, simplified Chinese, traditional Chinese, Korean and Vietnamese, and how this can contribute to make Indigenous stories more accessible to diverse audiences?
Yeah, well, our program has been, subtitled in different languages for the last few years, actually. As you mentioned, simplified Chinese and Arabic amongst those languages. And it's really, you know, an important way of getting to, you know, another audience and getting to, you know, to the community and letting them know about First Nations issues. So, we're really proud and very excited that this will continue this year and, you know, that we're able to get to another, as we know, we have a very multicultural community in Australia, and so we want to make sure that, that we're speaking to those communities as well and letting them know about First Nations issues and letting them know about the perspectives that we have on, you know, our issues. So, so that will be happening again this year.
How does Living Black plan to engage and inspire younger generations of First Nations viewers in Australia and internationally?
I guess that's, comes through with the lineup that we have. We have such a diverse lineup of conversations for the series. So there's something there for everyone. And, you know, we've got Emily Waramara, who's a young Anandiliakwa singer and songwriter, and you know, other people in the lineup as well will appeal to, you know, different sectors of you know, different sections of our audience. So there is something there for everyone, and yeah, we hope that all our audiences will enjoy the new series coming up.
Now, I know I've taken much of your time, but before I let you go, would you have any closing thoughts or maybe something to add we may have missed that's really important to bring to the attention of our listeners?
This year we really have a focus on how we're perceived, you know, on a global sort of stage as well. So we are actually going to be speaking with the First Nations Ambassador, Justin Muhammad, who was appointed last year, I believe, you know, by the Foreign Minister, Penny Wong. And he's looking at, you know, foreign policy and how government can adopt Indigenous, you know, issues into that foreign policy. So we're hopefully going to be following him somewhere around the world. I can't sort of say where that's going to be just yet, but we want to see him in action here in Australia and how he sort of, you know, interacts with our communities here, but also how he takes our issues to a global stage and highlights those issues. For instance, he will be going to the UN and he's going to the Festival of Pacific Arts this year in Hawaii. So he's got a number of different engagements, and we're hoping to sort of, you know, tag along with him on one of those events and see, you know, how our issues are raised on a global scale.
Kyla Grant, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us on NITV Radio today, and congratulations on a new season of Australia's longest-running Indigenous Current Affairs program.
Thank you so much for having me, Bertrand.
Visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
Now, if you want to listen again to this conversation with Kyla Grant, you can find it on our website, sbs.com.au/NITV Radio. And we are soon coming to the end of today's program. I'm Bertrand Tongandame, thanking you for your company this Wednesday afternoon. Your program will be back on Friday with more news and stories from right across the country. Leaving you with this beautiful song, Until You Call My Name by Radhiko San.
Finding our way.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.